Good morning, everyone. Reading this morning from Pastor Shiva, lesson 39, Who Are the Four Great Dhamma Saints? The Nalvars are four Saiva saints who lived in Tamil Nadu around 1200 years ago. Each composed devotional songs that are sung today in satsangs and temples. Their names are Appar, Sundarar, Sambandar, and Manika Vasagar. All are deeply revered by Tamil Saivites. Saint Tirunavukkarasa, known as Appar, traveled from temple to temple worshipping Shiva. He chose the humblest of work, sweeping the temple walks and weeding the stone courtyards. Saint Sundarar is known for his deep visions of Lord Shiva and for several miraculous events that occurred in his life. A poor man, he often prayed for money or food for his family. His prayers were always answered. The third saint, Sambandar, was just 3 years old when he was blessed with a vision of Lord Shiva, after which he spontaneously sang his first song. He traveled throughout South India, sometimes with Appar, his elder, singing the praises of Shiva. At age 16, his family arranged for him to be married, but this was not to be. He was so devoted to Shiva that just before the wedding, he disappeared into the sanctum of Tirunallur Peruman Shiva Temple near Chidambaram and was never seen again. The songs of the first three saints are called Devarams. Manika Vasagar, the fourth Nalvar, was prime minister to the Pandyan king of Madurai. One day he was blessed with enlightenment in the vision of Lord Shiva sitting under a banyan tree. After this, he left the royal court and traveled about, composing songs and building a temple for Shiva at Tiruperundurai. His poems stress the importance of the Namah Shivaya mantra, developing dispassion, and cultivating love of Lord Shiva. His highly poetic hymns are found in two collections, Tiruvasagam and Tirukovaya. And we have our comment from Gurudeva. Our saints have sung that Shiva is within us, and we are within Shiva. Knowing that, fear and worry and doubt are forever gone from our mind. One of the challenges of working with the hymns are, they're written in Tamil, and they're poetic, and they're rhymed in the Tamil way, where you rhyme the first word of the line, not the last word as in English. It was beautiful poetry, but then when you put it in English, it loses all this beautiful poetry. It becomes something quite different than it is in Tamil. So, really, to get the true beauty of it, you really have to have a sense of the Tamil and what it's saying and the use of words in it. Some of them translate better than others, stand on their own in English. This is one I like because it has a good meaning in English without the poetry. It's Kolaru Patigam, it's called. And there's a story that goes with it. The story is a bit complicated, so I'll have to read it. In the 7th century in Tamil Nadu, Jainism was on the rise in the Pandyan kingdom, and even the king had become a Jain. It's very easy back then to convert people to a religion. All you had to do was convert the king. Lots of other people followed. There was a lot of discrimination against Saivites. The queen, Mangayar Karasiyar, and the chief minister, Kulachirayar, were perturbed by these events. They learned about the greatness of Tudriyana Sambandar and became convinced he could show the Pandyan king the right path. They sent a message to Tudriyana Sambandar explaining the situation and requesting him to visit Madura. Sambandar was with Tirunavakarasar in Tiruvengadu. When the request reached him, Sambandar, who was only 7 years old at the time, agreed to go to Madurai. But Tirunavakarasar, who himself had been persecuted by the Jains in the past, feared that young Sambandar would be harmed. Further deducing that astrologically it was not an auspicious time for the venture, he tried to dissuade Sambandar from going. Tudriyana Sambandar responded that no harm will come to an ardent Shiva devotee like him. He then sang the verses of Kolaru Patigam, literally means removing the negative effects of the planets. I'll read two of the verses. Starts out talking about Ardhanarishvara. One who has a woman with bamboo-like shoulders as a part of his body, one with the throat stained by the poison he ate, and one who plays the veena faultlessly while wearing the blemishless moon and the Ganga river on his head, he has entered my heart. And because of this, for devout people like me, the forces of the sun, moon, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, Saturn, and the snakes, Rahu and Ketu, will not cause anything evil, but only good, the truly good. One who wears the garland of bones that bestows bodily strength, the sharp bones that give the mental courage to combat, the turtle that allows the exploring of the dark ocean of the unconscious unafraid, he has also implanted himself, riding the bull with the woman as his equal half, wearing golden chains on the neck and Ganges in the tuft. He has entered my heart. Therefore, the different astronomically calculated days, times, and seasons can only be good and loving, can only do good for devotees of Shiva. That's the idea. Interesting. And planned it, but we have a lunar eclipse coming out. big fuss in Malaysia over the lunar eclipse because the management of the Batu Caves temple won't close the temple, whereas the Malaysia Hindu Sangam has asked all temples to be closed during the hours of the eclipse. They are not complying, so it's causing a big stir in my emails. Well, how do we look at all of that? That's a good question. It's not that we want to ignore astrology and say all days are the same. But it's saying that devotion to Shiva, having Shiva in your heart, offers a protection. That's what it's saying. Things will work out better if you're in that flow of devotion to Shiva than if you're not in that flow of devotion to Shiva. And that offers a protection from these what can be negative forces. Sometimes I get asked about astrology by individuals during, or families during darshan sessions, and usually they're surprised that we take it so seriously. I guess it's the modern Hindu viewpoint is it's a bit old-fashioned. But we don't want to be overly looking at it also. In other words, we need to guide the major events of our life by having them happen during good astrological times. For example, the Kumbhabhishekam for Eriman Temple, we're not going to do it on a lunar eclipse. For a really major event, marriage, putting your life savings into a new business, major events in your life, you want to choose a good day for it, which is good for you and good in general. That's one of the ways in which we use astrology. And then the other one is compatibility. When we think of compatibility, we generally think of marriage compatibility, but any type of compatibility. Compatibility between two people who are going to become business partners is good to do as well, as they may not get along, may not work out. So compatibility is very useful for marriage and other types of partnerships. So those are two ways in which astrology is important. It can also give you hope. When everything seems to be going wrong, you can look at your astrology and blame it on that. But astrology was set up in a very interesting way. I think Shiva is a compassionate god, and the way he set up astrology was compassionate. That goes back and forth between positive periods and negative periods. It doesn't stay negative for 60 years. You go through some things for a while, and you can see an end to it. That's one of the benefits. If it is a difficult period, you can see it, that it has a date there, that it's over. That can be very encouraging as well. Have a wonderful day. Om Namah Shivaya.